Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2018. I'm sorry about the delay in beginning this one. It was unavoidable, unforeseeable circumstances, but it's fine now. So this is now the fifth night, and there was the pre-recorded one with Greg Johnson, which I hope you enjoyed. And now here we are with the Iconoclast. So welcome, Dan.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me again. Hello, chat. Merry Christmas to all. Man, time goes fast, doesn't it? It doesn't feel like 2 weeks ago that I was talking to you last year on Millennial. It's kind of mad, isn't it?
No, I know, I know. Well, we were just saying that I think you had about 50,000 subscribers at that point. So it's and you started that at the start of that year, didn't you? So now you've got 180,000. Your channel's really exploded, and well done, and congratulations.
Well, thanks a lot. I try not to think about the numbers, to be honest, because, I remember earlier this year I cracked 100K and I thought, oh shit. Now it's downhill, isn't it? Now the pressure's on, and I try not to look at that subscriber count because you do feel the pressure. And it's
Oh
like,
God, don't get me started.
yeah, and I'm not the kind of guy who uploads 4 videos a week or something like others, and when you have that many people subscribe to you, I was thinking, oh God, I need to make just more videos. But then I take a lot of time over what I put out, and half the shit that I would pump out if I wasn't taking that time would be garbage. And I thought, well, let's go for quality over quantity. Let's ignore the numbers from now on. And I think I've done some decent stuff this year. I think I've developed my channel, and yeah, 2019 is going to be a good one as well, I think.
About the quality versus quantity is absolutely essential, because what lingers in people's minds is your last video and your last few videos. And I think people, obviously, if you make crap ones and consistently, then obviously that's going to change people's perceptions of you. Whereas if you make fewer videos, then that doesn't really change the perception of you. It might annoy them, like when's he going to put out another video? But at least it doesn't lower you in their minds. I think that's very important.
Yeah, and another thing is, who's got the time to watch all this stuff anyway? I mean, I barely, when I'm not making videos for YouTube, I'm barely watching anything myself. So if I was to like put out 3 30-minute videos a week, I'm thinking, who's going to watch this? Who's got the time, man? It's just, I'm very conscious of that. So if anyone's hoping for me to be more productive in the next year, you're going to be disappointed, I'm afraid. Like 2 videos a week at most. I'm sorry about that.
I know what you mean. I'm in the same boat. I cannot, like, it used to be that I would listen to multiple podcasts and many channels, but nowadays just no. But that's even with, I mean, it's not like I'm constantly putting out videos. Everyone knows that I've been taking it, well, not taking it easy, but I haven't been productive in terms of videos for quite a few months. But there's just so much work to do that you can. I mean, the other thing is that the sphere has grown so much now that there are you cannot keep up with everything that's coming out. When I started my channel in 2014, it was a very different situation, and really, I mean, I cannot tell you how much it's changed. I'll be doing a sort of retrospective thing for the fifth anniversary in January, and we'll sort of talk about it there, how much the whole situation has changed. And it used to be that you could keep up with everything, really. Literally everything, but certainly not nowadays.
So you've been on here since 2014. Do you feel like from then till now, the time has gone by quick or slowly, or is it like a flash? You don't know where the time's gone. Suddenly you're 5 years in and it's out of your control now.
Well, that it's like everything at once. On the one hand, it just feels like yesterday that I was starting this with absolutely no experience, and then you'll sort of think about it at another point in time, and you'll think, God, it has actually been 5 years. It feels like 5 years. Sometimes it feels like 5 years. Sometimes it feels like 5 minutes. Very, very confusing, because so much has happened in the world at large and on YouTube. The culture has changed. The politics have changed. The technology has changed slightly. And definitely the situation on YouTube has changed, and YouTube itself has changed, because it's the censorship now is much more of an issue than it was. I mean, you'll have seen it yourself, even in the 2 years that you've been going. It's very different now.
Oh God. I mean, just this week, actually, I had a video put into limited state, and that takes my total of limited state videos to at least 5. I've had a couple more banned, and I've had a few strikes over the course of my 2-year channel lifetime. So,
well, and you got banned from Twitter. Was that in April or something like that?
That was very early on in the year, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I even forget about these things, really. Like you said, it just happens so quickly. And I've been on here for nearly 2 years now, and it feels like I started last week. It's actually very disconcerting, because I'm thinking, God, it's 2 years of my life. Mm. You know, I know I've built something here that I'm proud of, but it's my life as well. It's worrying, you know?
But that's the thing. I think you're in a similar position to me, in the sense that before you did this, you didn't really have much to be proud of, frankly. And I'm going by what you've said yourself. I mean, forgive me if that's too harsh.
No, that's true. I said that last year on Millennial, yeah. Everything I tried before this channel kind of fell flat on its ass. This just kind of took on a life of its own, and I don't know why that is. And you're right. Now I feel like I'm decent at something, and
yeah,
I can build something, and it's, you know, it's cool. But at the same time, why did it have to be this? I mean, this isn't exactly a bed of roses, you know. This is stressful stuff. I mean, the topics we talk about aren't exactly, you know, some of them keep you up at night.
Yeah,
why did it have to be this?
But at least there is the sort of feeling that, okay, it's been 2 years of my life, but it's been a very, I mean, presumably you feel it's been a worthwhile 2 year. Like, for the 2 years that you've given, you've got a lot back. I certainly feel like that about the channel, about my channel.
Yeah, of course. I do feel like that. It hasn't come without its sacrifices, I'd say. I mean, everyone can relate to this. You know, you get into politics, especially our brand of politics, and you'll lose a shit ton of friends that you've had for years. I mean, I had one of my best friends that I'd known for at least 15 years just cut me off completely because I voted for Brexit. And if that was enough, just voting for Brexit, if that was enough for him, then maybe it's a good thing he didn't know me. He'd probably kill himself by the sort of shit that I talk about. And yeah, I don't know, but in the long run and overall, it has been very beneficial. My life has improved significantly, both professionally and personally. And it's only looking rosy for the future, really, despite the threats that we face via censorship and other things. But yeah,
well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, the threat we face in terms of censorship is that you could lose it all. But of course, even then, the unique thing about YouTube is that if your channel does get shut down, terminated, you can just start another one. That's not the case on other platforms, where I've said this myself about in recent months, if you get banned from Twitter, that's it. You know, if you get banned from other platforms, that's it. But with YouTube, quite uniquely, they understand you're probably just going to create another channel. And so, you know, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, when I got banned off Twitter, and I didn't feel the urge to go back on.
Shall we compare experiences of this?
I don't think anyone wants to hear about Twitter anymore, to be honest. But
oh, God,
I'll just say, like, when I got banned, it was almost a relief for me, because I thought I found myself spending more and more time on it. And I wasn't really doing anything productive. It was taking up, I mean, just days and days of my life. And I was relieved when that happened. Same thing that's happening with Patreon now. I'm deleting my Patreon by the end of the month, because it's just going to happen there, and I don't want to wait for it to come round to me. I'd rather get ahead of the situation and just take a stand against that stuff.
I wonder what Patreon are going to, because there is always that question of do they actually care about the money or not? You know, because they are being disgraced. I mean, they're being embarrassed by this. It's backfired on them in the sense of reputational damage. But do you think they care? Because, you know, there are some people who say they really don't care. Because, you know, they know that they're going to be assured a future anyway. So if they lose all of these dissident creators, then it really doesn't matter.
That's a good question. I'm not really sure. The thing with Silicon Valley companies is that most of them operate at a loss, don't they? They're worth a lot of money, but they don't really make a lot of. It's all in a bubble, right? I could have that completely wrong, but it seems like they've created their own ecosystem in this area, and it's their rules or get out. And I think you're right. I don't think the money is that important. over the fact that as long as they can implement their ideological tyranny on us.
Yeah, I was going to say they're sort of maintaining ideological conformity, but ideological tyranny is probably a better term.
Yeah, and you know what? These alternative sites that are popping up, like Subscribestar now. I mean, it's foolish for anyone to think that that's a long-term option, because Maker Support died, Patreon died. The odds aren't good, and I don't want to disparage Subscribestar or any other alternative site, but this is an uphill battle, and I think people like you and I and other creators should really start thinking long-term about how to effectively combat this rather than just migrating to other platforms.
Well, I'm on Subscribestar now, along with a lot of other people, and the fact that Sargon is there kind of changes everything. Well, the fact that Sargon has to be there kind of changes everything, because if Subscribestar go down, what's Sargon going to do? I think it means that there's a sort of imperative to keep it going somehow. So I don't know it is actually very interesting what would happen if Stripe shut it down or something, or MasterCard or whoever it is that would shut Subscribestar down. I mean, honestly, before this happened with Sargon, I was thinking, what the fuck are we going to end up doing? I was thinking, I actually set up a PO box a few months ago. I don't know if you've ever thought of doing that. There are other things. There's Bitcoin and all that, but most people don't know anything about Bitcoin. I don't know anything about Bitcoin. And but I think we are going to end up probably literally mailing cash to PO boxes. I think that's what we're going to end up. The only option we'll be left with in the end, because they can't deplatform you from the post office.
Well, interesting you should say that. I've had people email me asking if I can receive checks. And
remember just, checks.
Yeah, well, I don't really. That's the point. I don't remember them. I've never had a checkbook. And, you know, and I wouldn't be against it. But at the same time, I wouldn't recommend sending checks in the mail to someone like me. I mean, it just seems like it's, why are we jumping through these hoops? It shouldn't be this hard, you know?
Oh, look, I mean, honestly, after my Twitter thing, I was really obsessed. We talked about how are we going to force Silicon Valley to, play ball. But I don't know if there is any way, because they don't care about the money. They don't care about the reputational damage. They really are just operating as political entities.
Yeah, and I don't have the answer either. I think the best thing we can do is just continue talking about what we talk about. Keep doing our stuff, and you know, they're showing themselves up for what they really are. And the more exposure, I mean, this Sargon thing's been huge, and I don't want to dwell on this too much because I don't want the audience to think, oh, it's just two YouTubers talking about money and deplatforming and all that stuff. But
no, but I mean, it does. It should be of interest to everyone. I mean, obviously, it's going to be a concern if any normal job. If you were saying, and you know, I might not get paid anymore. No, no sane person would think, well, why are you talking about that? Why do you care about that? You know, so let's not beat ourselves up too much about this, because, I do want to make a living here.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I'm lucky in the sense that YouTube isn't my full income in life. I do other things. And I mean, it's grown to be a decent size income for me, but it's not the end of the world if I get kicked off Patreon or Subscribestar, really. So, I mean, I'd rather offer people a product like the magazine or something, just something worthwhile.
Well, that's
something physical.
You started the magazine quite early. Was that not about, when was it actually? I think it feels like about a year ago.
Yeah, it was October last year. I had the idea for the mag before I even started the channel, but I didn't have a platform to launch it from. And I thought, well, you can't launch a magazine with no audience, can you? It's stupid, you know? And, I just think it's a great way to circumvent this censorship stuff, because it is something you hold in your hand and you can share with people and all that sort of stuff. And, I'd rather do more of that, which I'm planning on doing next year. I'm planning on making it a quarterly release. I think that would be a really good step. And I've got a distribution company on board as well locally, so that's a hell of a lot of help for me.
That's fantastic. And, tell people about the magazine, because, I'm sure that most of my subscribers will be sub to you, but just in case they're they're not, right?
Yeah, well,
tell people about the magazine.
Sure. Last year I launched an opinion magazine for people like us who don't really have their views aired in the mainstream media. We're getting kicked off all sorts of platforms. And I started the magazine for my audience really to say their piece, because not everyone's skilled in making videos or audio podcasts or whatever it happens to be. Lots of people can express themselves better through writing. And I started accepting submissions for articles, and they came in, and I released the first mag. It was quite successful. And then the second one, which got bigger, and then the third one, which was the biggest. And I'm just going to continue doing that. And
what kind of content is there in the magazine? What kind of topics?
Well, it's political opinions from people who are on the right side of the spectrum, I would say. I'm not opposed to hosting people with an opposite ideological slant, but I really want this to be a place for us and for our people who agree with us and who want to get their opinions out there to similar like-minded people. So we have political essays from people who, I mean, they could talk about anything. I'm having an article in the next magazine about classical music.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, and I just want to get into all these little areas and have a political slant on all this stuff, cultural slant. And I think it's really beneficial.
This is such a great idea. It's like, it's exactly what we need to be doing and what we've always needed to be doing. Because it's boring if things are just politics all the time. I think you do need a sort of cultural fabric sort of underpinning the politics.
Exactly. And it always relates back to what's going on culturally and in our sphere, because that's the aim of the magazine, to draw attention to all this stuff. But the reception's been very positive. Now, obviously, my 180,000 subscribers, only about, 1,000 people will buy the magazine because it's a niche thing. But it's really starting to take off. And I love getting messages from people who say, I lent the magazine to my granddad or my brother, and they read this article and they said this about it. And it's just really nice. It's like real life stuff. It's so simple, yet it's so new in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like the 100 Handers campaign. It's so simple and yet it's so effective, and no one else has done this. I mean, the magazine that you're describing, it's like, yes, it's a simple idea, but nobody else has really, well, at least nobody's done it from this direction, from YouTube, and then, using that as the sort of springboard for a magazine readership.
Yeah. I'll get you to write an article, mate. Sometime next year. That'd
be good. That would be nice, and thank you for the offer. But it's a matter of time. But yeah, I'd be delighted to appear in the magazine.
Hugh, on the offensive, he joked to me. He said, "Oh, you should get Colin to do an agony aunt section in each magazine. Like, you send him your questions about life, and he'll answer." And I said, "I don't think he's got the time for something like that." But that's a nice joke. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. I do like that idea. I used to be I was once just called something the self-proclaimed agony aunt of the alt-right or something like that. That was about a year ago, but yeah, I used to have the Ask FM page, and I do still have it, but it's kind of dead at this point, because I was drowning in questions from people. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, well, the answer clearly is to have a right-wing equivalent of Hello Magazine. That's the way to go, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tabloid, yeah. Trash, horoscopes, all the full works. It'll be amazing. We'll sell out. This is a billion-dollar idea.
We're going to have a crossword as well.
Oh, God, yes.
That'd be very amusing. I just think this is a really good idea. I mean, I think it's... something that is needed. I mean, is it mostly, do you even know, is it mostly a British readership or what? Is it international?
It is majority British, yes, but the United States is the next most popular country, which has up to this point been a pain in the ass for me, because, I have to ship all of these copies, and shipping to the United States in bulk is never an easy thing to do. I mean, it's very, very stressful. Almost like you at the end of a millennial schedule. When I finish a magazine and get all the stuff shipped, I just don't want to look at it for months. I don't want to think about it. I just want to sleep. It's exhausting. But next year, I'm getting a bit of help, and I think it's going to accelerate the process, and it's going to be a lot better for everybody. And my living room won't be a post office anymore. There won't be boxes lying around everywhere. I'm looking forward to it. That's all I can say. And just to your audience listening, submissions are open. So send me an email with a pitch for anything you want to talk about, and I'll read it and I'll get back to you. And if it's good, you might get some space in the mag. That'd be nice.
Excellent. Well done. That's great. Yeah, we can. I'll put that into the description at the end in case anyone's curious about that. So, yeah, what else should we talk about? We didn't really have a plan for this one, did we?
No, not really. No.
Yeah, because we started in quite a hurry. That was unfortunate. But I guess what we can also talk about is your own channel. I mean, how did we? I think we must have talked a year ago about why you started it and that kind of thing. And what are your plans for the future of it?
That's always an interesting question because I don't have a concrete answer for it. I would like to go out on the street a little more, do more real life interactions, and actually go to the scene of stuff to take firsthand footage. I went to the UKIP conference earlier this year, did a video about that. I was going to go to the Polish Independence March in November, but I had to cancel that at the very last minute due to extortionate plane prices, which was very disappointing. I would like to do more things like that. Go out, take footage and talk to people on the street and just get a firsthand perspective of what's going on, especially in mainland Europe where it's all happening right now. I would love to do that. I enjoyed the UKIP conference for what it was. It was like, it was good to get out the bedroom, you know? It was fun.
I've heard it's good to get, yeah. Do you think that there's enough to sort of occupy people with just in Britain alone, or do you feel like you want to expand into Europe for what reasons? Is it because that there isn't enough in Britain, or because you want to?
That's a couple of reasons. Just my personal interest, really, of what's going on in Europe is probably, I'm more interested in that than what's going on in Britain, because honestly, this country, the United Kingdom right now, I just feel so apathetic about what's going on here, which is, I suppose, the desired effect, because we're seeing what's going on with the Brexit process. They want people to feel apathy towards it so they can just say, yeah, let's just not do it. Let's just cancel. Let's do everyone a favor and call it all off. That's a lot.
That is something we should certainly talk about, because what do you think? It actually seems to me like it's exactly what you just said there, that they want to stretch this out so much that people just actually lose interest.
Yes, and I think it's working. It is, because I tried to make a video about Brexit last week and I got halfway through and I couldn't finish it because I'm just like, I'm doing this because I feel like I have to say something, but it's just, I feel drained talking about it because it's so useless. Everything's just falling apart. And of course, I will talk about it down the line, but I need to take a break from that for a while.
See, it's terrible. We are only human, and there is a certain amount of momentum, and eventually, you can't sort of muster interest in this topic, even if you know how important it is. Because of course, if you can't muster interest, then why would your viewers be able to muster interest and watch the damn video?
Exactly. And I feel the same way about other subjects like Islam, for example. We discussed this last year. We're both bored of that. We are. But
I haven't talked about Islam for like a year and a half at least.
Yeah, well, I have talked about it quite recently, actually, but it was more to do with government legislation rather than Islam itself. And it's one of those subjects where you feel like you've exhausted everything. Yet you know it's still important and you can't ignore it and you can't let yourself just forget that it's there because it is a problem. But there's so many other people doing that effectively. You feel like you don't really need to say any more about it.
Well, yeah, and also if you've said everything that you can say about it, then you're just spinning your wheels, as it were. But I know exactly what you mean, because it's still a problem. It's still pertinent, still relevant. And actually, in the case of Brexit, you could say that it gets ever more pertinent, because the longer it goes on, the more our politicians are betraying us, and it does seem like they are joyously betraying us. I mean, it seems like they're heading towards like the finishing line. If they just keep going, that they'll have this. They will have got away with rejecting the people's democratic voice, their decisions.
And I'll guarantee, if they do either cancel it or call a second referendum, they've already won, really, because it will just convince millions of people that it's not worth voting. It's not even worth getting involved in the process anymore, which it really isn't when you think about it in our system. I mean, when an election comes around where I live, my vote doesn't count for shit. It doesn't. It doesn't matter who I vote for, because the Labour Party wins every single time up here. And we have we don't have proportional representation, so it's not like I can influence anything else anywhere across the country. And it's just one of those things. Now I've got problems with democracy, like we all do, but in one of the purest forms of democracy we've ever had in this country, a yes-no referendum on a particular issue, it's just been smeared, slandered. Oh, that's not real democracy. Democracy is a process, don't you know? We have to do it again. Oh, they didn't know what they were voting for. It's just such bullshit. And they'll convince millions of people that it's not worth even getting out of bed to do this anymore, which means they'll be able to do whatever they want. And that's their goal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. It was annoying for them that they had to do this referendum in the first place. I mean, they only did it because UKIP were becoming a threat of some kind to the Tories, to the Conservatives, sort of electoral threat.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as soon as you say that democracy is a failed system, people look at you with, you know, a weird look and think, well, are you a fascist? What are you talking about? Do you want a dictatorship? And I'm like, no, I don't know what I want, but I know I don't want this. This isn't working.
Yeah.
Why is that controversial to say? And what even is democracy anymore? Everyone's got a different interpretation of it. Official democracies, Britain's different to Spain, Spain's different to Germany, and so on.
Well, you know, I did a few pre-records for Millennial, I think about, I don't know, 12 of them in total. And at that point, the UN Global Migration Compact was on the cards. Theresa May hadn't signed it yet. But I know that when these go up, people will, like, I was saying all the time to these in these pre-records, and she, it looks like she's going to sign it. And now it's historical. Now she has, like 4 days ago, she fucking signed it. And the thing is, nobody, I mean, what is the, as you say, what's the point of democracy if it just goes nowhere? Basically, the elite get what they want, no matter what. That seems to be it. And like nobody would want that bloody woman to sign that a fucking compact, but she's done it. She's got it, done it. It doesn't matter. And you see this all the time, you know, with different things. I mean, I don't even know what the numbers are for immigration now. I used to keep up with this.
Yeah.
But the fact is that she, when she was home, and it's not even about Theresa, I mean, I'm moaning about her just now, but she's just a placeholder for all of these awful politicians. When she was Home Secretary, she was absolutely incompetent at this. It was never reduced to the tens of thousands. And never. I don't think it even ever went down, actually.
No, it went up.
Yeah. And as the Prime Minister, it's the same thing. I mean, it's like, they don't give a fuck. It's just, the decline is almost maintained through apathy or just manipulation, lies, dishonesty. It's like we're governed by people who are determined to drive this country, well, every country in Europe, into the ground. It's like they're annoyed when they're forced to not do that, or when they're forced to do it a bit more slowly. Yeah, you know, it's like, oh, the public again are getting in the way. Fucking hell.
Yeah, well, it's a circus, isn't it? And I guess what we should be thinking about is, yeah, the system's rigged against people like us. It always has been. Instead of crying about it, how do we perhaps use it to our advantage? And one idea I've had, and it's because of Millennial, actually, so you can take credit for this, although it's not an original idea. It just came to my mind. You were talking to UKIPper earlier in the week.
Oh, yes.
And I didn't know that he was from the Northeast. I didn't know that he was from my neck of the woods up here. Very surprised, pleasantly surprised to hear a Geordie accent come out of his mouth. And, you know, there's a few of us up here now. There's myself, UKIPper, Duke of Durham, Morgoth, of course. We can't forget. I don't know why that is, but there's a concentrated group of people up here that are into nationalism. So I think localism is the way forward. And organizing on a local level for local issues and local people, and try and try and make an entry point in that way, kind of like what Salvini did with the Northern League in Italy. And you see where he's at now.
I mean, yeah.
That's impressive. I don't know how it would work in our system, but I think it's something to consider at the very least.
I think, yes, I agree. And I think it, if nothing else, it would be good for people to have, you know, a social thing that they could plug into. I think that's sorely needed. It has been for years.
And people are very attached to their regional roots. I think even the most hardened leftist you can find is probably nostalgic about their hometown or, you know, the street they grew up on in some capacity. Whereas, you know, I know that that's definitely the case for a lot of people up here. They always go on about how proud they are of where they're from. It's a lot easier to connect people with something like that than something bigger like the nation state as a whole. Obviously, you want to build up to that, but it's best to start small and kind of say, yeah, these neighborhoods that you love so much that you grew up on, that street you played football on as a kid, where your dad worked down the river at the glassworks or the shipbuilding or the mines. Yeah, you know what's there now? It's not nice. It's gone to the dogs, and this is what we have to do about it. Maybe something like that galvanize the real disenfranchised people in this country.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, people do seem to feel increasingly detached from the nation state. I think, you know, there's a lot that can be said about that, because on the one hand, you know, as nationalists, we want people to care about the nation state. But right now, you can understand why they just don't. You know, when they've got politicians at the national level who are really just working to their own agenda, then of course people are going to retreat to something, and that will either be online culture, a subculture, or just their local area.
Exactly, and it's a similar story many places you go, especially in the north. There's always this notion that people say, well, they don't care about us down in London. If they could, they'd saw us off and send us packing with Scotland. You know what I mean? Like, that's the attitude people have. And in some respects, it's not completely untrue. But it can be used to our advantage, that angst and that disappointment and anger, really, at the elites down south that have sold this place out for decades. Doesn't matter what government it was, Labour, Conservatives, although the people up here have a Stockholm Syndrome relationship with the Labour Party that needs to be broken as quickly as possible.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's something, I mean, we could, well, actually, you sort of summarised that for anyone who's not familiar with this. You go for it.
Right, so basically where I'm from, northeast of England, Sunderland, Newcastle, that sort of area, Labour Party wins everywhere, almost everywhere, because they're perceived as being the party of the miners, of the ship dock workers, of the glass workers, the steel workers. Thatcher is the most evil person that's ever lived in the history of the earth. That propaganda is everywhere. Even people that weren't alive when she was prime minister think she's the devil, because the information gets passed down from parents and grandparents. And they all turn around and vote for the Labour Party, which, let's be honest, isn't exactly the party of the white working class right now, is it?
I mean, it's destroying them. And this stuff with the grooming gangs just, you know, is the most awful demonstration of that.
Yeah, believe me, I've tried to get through to so many people up here about how, I'm not saying they should vote for the Tories. Oh my God, no. That's not what I'm saying. And that's often what people perceive me of trying to convince them to do. They're saying, well, you're anti-Labour Party. You must want me to go for the Conservatives. I'm like, no, mate, absolutely not. Please. Yeah,
there are other options. That's the thing. We've got to break this bloody strangle. I mean, this is what Peter Hitchens has been saying, that they're both two corpses leaning, supporting each other. And yeah, that's what we've got to break, is this awful stranglehold of Labour and the Conservatives.
I know. And it's, you watch the mainstream media, and I swore I wasn't going to bring him up in this stream, but I will. Owen Jones, right? Just as an example. All right. Let's not get sidetracked.
Here we go. Owen Jones, yay.
But literally everything you hear out of his mouth is, it's like that Harry Enfield sketch, the Tories, the Tories, the Tories, the bloody Daily Mail. That's all he has. And it's people like him and The Guardian and The Independent and all these other papers. And you can count the Daily Mail and The Express. It's either Labour are shite, the Tories are shite, let's fight this out between the two parties. And it's like, can we not break free from these two, as Peter Hitchens says, corpses? Please. There's a bigger world out there, guys.
Yeah, there are more possibilities. Yeah, there are more possibilities, and we don't need to be shackled by these historical, baggages. Yeah, yeah, well, all this nonsense, the rivalry between these two parties, it's been going for 100 years now. The fact that it's 100 years since, the Labour Party, forgotten when they had their first government. I can't remember now, but it's about 100 years ago. Well, that means that a new party could emerge and just do what Labour has done, become a massive, major electoral force. It's not the Labour Party is not ancient. The Conservative Party is. It goes back like 300 years at least. But not. The point is that the system is flexible enough to accommodate new parties. I think that, well, before, I'll let you speak. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I agree. The system, while we all agree is a terrible system, and it's easy to get blackpilled about it and think, oh, nothing's worth it, it's just never going to work. Well, no, it's not like you things can be achieved, even if you just put a wedge in the system, like a little, or even just a thorn from a rose bush. Things can be done. Now, of course, I want the entire system to come down and be rebuilt as something else, like we all do. But realistically, pragmatically, is that going to happen in the next 5-10 years? No, it's not. So we have to think of ways to get in this system and actually use it to our advantage. It's a hard job, of course, but it's not impossible.
What do you think about the future of UKIP?
That's a tough one. So let me just give some context here. I'm a member of UKIP officially, but I joined UKIP purely in order to attend the conference in September, because you have to be a member to get in, obviously. And I knew I wanted to go there and make a video about it and see what's what. They'd been making a lot of noise. Obviously, all the YouTubers had joined by that point. And I really like Gerard Batten. I think he's a very professional, calm guy who gets his points across rarely without raising his voice or getting angry. He's very assertive, and people listen to him, and the confidence he lets off is really quite inspiring, actually. I wish I was a bit more like that. I went down there just to see what was up and see what the trajectory was of the party. And long story short, the jury's still out for me. I'm not quite sure. I don't want to officially endorse them yet, because there's still a lot of things that they won't touch. Now, on the other side, maybe we should support them anyway, because we all need to be in this together. And one of the big problems on the right, I'm sure you'll agree, is this
inciting rivalries, vendettas, all the rest of it. Yeah, I never tired of moaning about that.
Exactly. And you look to someone like For Britain, Anne-Marie Waters. She's got personal animosities with people in UKIP, which is why she formed that party. But all that's doing is splitting the vote. And all that's doing is
same if Farage creates his new party.
Yeah.
Exactly. And Henry Bolton, the previous leader, he's gone off, and I think he's created his own party as well. Come on.
Well, I hope Henry Bolton's party doesn't have many supporters. I mean, that would be the most depressing thing.
Mm.
All this stuff is very counterproductive, and I just wish that we were like the left in their organization, really, and we could pull something together. Which is why I'm so big on this localism thing right now. It's been in my head the last few days. I think that's somewhere to start, really.
Well, and you've got 180,000 people to start off with. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and let's not forget, the really old methods of getting information out there, or political activism, if you will, like simple things like putting stickers on lampposts or leafleting. These things may seem old-fashioned and primitive, I suppose, but they're effective. I can't tell you how many leaflets I find in my letterbox every other week from the Labour Party, the Lib Dems, the Green Party are everywhere for some reason. I mean, everyone else does it. Why aren't we? These really simple tactics that people just kind of toss off and say, no, it's all about the internet now. Well, actually, it's not. There's so many people out there who can be reached through traditional means, and we're not doing it right now.
Yeah, and yeah, and see, that brings us back to the thing about donation via PO box as well. It's funny, like we might have to, in multiple ways, go back to old ways of doing stuff. It's quite interesting in a way. I mean, it's not what I would have chosen, because I love the speed and fastness and simplicity of the internet, like all of us do. But at the same time, you know, I don't know. It feels like going back to Greendale, you know, going back to Postman Pat and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's kind of funny. It's not what I would have expected at all.
Yeah, we're going back to the days of Thomas the Tank Engine, yeah, when you can actually pull on the fat controller.
Yeah, exactly. It's like HTML6 is going to be, you know, post office.
But it is true, isn't it? What's old is now new. I mean, bloody vinyl made a comeback. That's doing better than ever. I mean, I know that's a weird example to link to this, but these things never lose their effectiveness. I mean, the internet may make a lot more noise in the immediate sense. Like you're saying, it's very fast and you can communicate with people like that. But the people who are in your neighborhood who aren't politically switched on, but they could be, I mean, they're not going to go on YouTube and search for Islamic grooming gangs Rotherham video. Let's hear some guy commentate on these news articles. They're not going to do that. They need the information in front of them. They need to be pushed the information. And they're the people that we need to reach as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you see, to get back to UKIP, I think that, I mean, it could be that Brexit just is dead. And it, as you say, it's the mainstream politicians are going to get away with simply not doing it. And that in itself is amazing. You could basically wear out the public's interest in something so as to get away with not doing what the public told you to do, even in this most blatant, in-your-face manner, this case. I think maybe that is what's going to happen. But if that does happen, then, well, that's going to change things for UKIP, because on the one hand, their raison d'etre will be revealed to have been completely futile and pointless. But on the other hand, it will give them added impetus to keep going and become a more general, I don't want to use the word revolutionary party, like, let's say a radical party that really does tackle the entire political system of this country.
I think we've been crying out for that for years now. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's fear or what that's holding people back from doing it. I think UKIP could be that party. And I think, to be fair, I think Gerard Batten understands this, and I think he wants to move it in that direction. I know lots of people have lots of opinions on Tommy Robinson. Some like him, some don't. Some question his sources of funding, which I completely understand. But, you know, getting him on board, it's a publicity stunt, really. And it's a sign that says, yeah, we're not going to be playing by the mainstream's rules anymore, really. You know, you'll call us all sorts of stuff, but you called us that before. So what does it matter? It's time to be bold, really. Time to do something different. And people may not like it, but division is good. All this talk of the country being divided, this and that, divisiveness. Division is a good thing. It means something is happening or something is attempting to happen. People are trying to do something good, you know?
Yeah, something is thrashing around trying to be born.
Yeah, I mean, the Conservative Party, for example, are the party of the status quo. If you don't want division, vote for them. If you want to wake up in the morning and ignore the problems in your society and pretend things are going well, then they're for you. But if you want to face up to these things and actually be honest about what's going on in this nation and further afield in Europe, then you've got to look for people to be bold and to take risks. And not enough people are doing that right now. But I hope that UKIP will. But they need to solve this. Ironically, I was just talking about division there, but they do need to solve this conflict on the right with all these other little parties coming up. They could work together for the greater good.
And within themselves as well. I mean, I don't know how divided UKIP is internally. I think that Nigel Farage's departure is going to be good for the party, actually, because I think you probably agree with me that he's let people down.
Yes, well, UKIP will always be associated with Nigel Farage in one way. But in terms of his active involvement, UKIP has told this to you on your stream. He hasn't been involved for the last 2 years. And when he has been involved, his decisions have been catastrophic. The Henry Bolton thing sums it up. So they do need to get away from him to develop and go forward. Now, I like Farage. I think what he's done is shouldn't be understated, and we should respect him for it. And I'd buy him a drink if I met him, obviously. But you know, it's time to move on, and we can't hold on to these gods anymore, I suppose. We need to just go forward and find something new and tread on ground that we haven't tread on before.
Yeah, I agree. That's a really nice, positive sort of tone to end on. However, I want to quickly go through the super chats because I have not been good enough at doing this. I apologize to everyone for the last few nights, especially last night. I was dreadful at this, and it's terrible. It's not good enough. I'm sorry. Now, we do have four super chats, one of which has been deleted. That's a bit of a shame. I don't know what that person was asking, but the first one was, "Hey, Icon," and I'm sorry to ask you this. It might be a bit awkward, but just be honest. "Hey, Iconoclast, you told Rage After Storm on a live stream that you would do a face reveal at 20,000 subscribers. How about doing one at 200K?
My God, you've been watching for a while, haven't you? Well, I don't know when I did that stream with Rage. It must have been when I had about 1,000. Truth be told, I didn't think I would ever reach 20,000, which is probably why I said that. I'm sorry to have been a filthy liar, but that's just the way it is.
Well, here we are, 10 times that number now.
I know. Well, that proves that I didn't have high hopes for my channel. I was just doing it to get something off my chest rather than some scheme to make money out of people like some people suggest. But I the reason I don't show my face is because, well, quite frankly, there's just, at the moment, there's too much in my life that I can't risk. And I'm sure everyone understands. If my situation improves, then I would have no problem doing that. But right now, it's just impossible. And I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm not that beautiful. I mean, it's going to be a disappointment no matter what. But there you go.
All right. And then another one relates to my T-shirt, actually. Someone says, "Was a Sega Mega Drive or Sega Genesis Match 3 puzzle game really worthy of a T-shirt?" And I'm afraid that the answer is yes. Yes, it was. It's Columns. This is, hold on a second, I'll stand up so that people can see it better. This was one of my favorite back in the day, back in the early 90s. I used to have a Sega Game Gear, and I fucking loved the game Columns. I play it for hours and hours. That one and Lemmings and various others, which we could probably nostalgically go into, but let's not do that. Because after all that UKIP talk, it would be indulgent to talk about such things. But yeah, I loved Columns, and it's one of those things that I really miss is the simplicity of games in those days, because it had to be an addictive, well-constructed game, you know, and I'm just not into modern stuff at all. But yeah, I discovered one of these, it was about a year ago now, I've had this for about a year, I discovered one of these online T-shirt, you know, shops, and you could get all these things like I don't know, like Blake 7 T-shirts, Red Dwarf T-shirts, Sega Mega Drive T-shirts. It's like stuff that you would never get in a shop. And I thought, fucking hell, that's really cool. You can get these obscure things. So I got this Columns T-shirt. So there you go. That's the explanation there. Trivia. Behind the scenes. and rumor control. So here's two serious questions. Okay. 50,000 yellow vests are going to protest the UN Migration Pact in Brussels. I didn't know about that.
Oh, me neither. That's really good, though. That's great. I didn't know about that at all. I'll have to look that up as soon as this ends, actually.
It's funny about this yellow vest thing. It's becoming a sort of, a spectre is haunting Europe, and it's people in yellow vests. I don't know why it's become a thing, but it definitely has. There were actually something in Westminster Bridge today. A bunch of people were doing this stuff.
Oh, really? But what was their angle on it, though? Because nobody, I can imagine...
Nobody knows. Thing.
Oh, then nobody knows, right. Yeah,
it's very vague. But that's what it's going to become. It's going to become like a sort of real-life meme where people just employ the yellow vest thing to... I don't know. I was going to say any sort of right-wing protest, but we don't even know if the yellow vest thing in France is mostly... right wing. We don't know that yet. So it's all a bit all over the place. And then here's another one. Would either of you support an Anglosphere union?
Can define that and we'll see what exactly would that entail.
I've no idea. I guess that would mean Britain, America, Canada, Australia and New Zealand.
In some sort of alternative to the European Union.
Yeah, I guess. So kind of, some kind of federation.
No, I wouldn't. I support the nation state. I don't want any sort of multinational organizations involved in anything like that. I think it doesn't need to be like that.
You see, I think I would, because I do. I find it kind of cool. I think the idea of being able to move between these different countries and all that, it's kind of... Yeah, I don't know. It excites me. However, the countries themselves would have to change first, because I don't want, there are populations in Canada and America today that I don't think have any place in Britain. But I think the ancestral populations do. I think there is a connection there, and a cultural and ethnic connection, which means that it makes sense for people to be able to move between these countries. But that has been sort of undone or sort of wrecked, as it were, by modern changes in these populations. So I don't think we do have that sort of commonality anymore. So if that were remedied, then yes, I would be up for free movement, definitely, between the Anglosphere countries. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And that's for a political federation. Yeah, something of the kind, yeah.
It's an important point to make, because in theory, in a perfect world, it sounds pretty good, but right now, when you look at the demographic situation of especially the United States, it's just not going to work out too well, is it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what have a bunch of Hispanics got to do with Britain? Come on. It would be absurd to give them free movement to just come and live here. So you've got, I don't know, it's like some Yorkshire town becomes a mini Mexico.
Can you imagine that? Yeah, but you think of the food, Colin. My God. The burritos.
I always forget about the food. Thank God there's always somebody to remind me about the incredible range of burritos.
And as long as they felt shame for the British Empire as well, what's the problem?
Yeah, exactly. All right, and somebody else, probably when I was talking about columns and the Sega Game Gear, somebody said, man, I miss the 90s. So Dan from the Iconoclast, do you miss the 90s?
Well, the standard answer is yes. The true answer is I barely remember anything from the 90s.
You're younger than me. Damn. I thought we were going to have a sort of closing nostalgic thing about the 90s. That's a shame.
The only thing I remember about the 90s is Marilyn Manson, because I used to love him when I was eight. That's it. Yeah.
Oh, well. Take it from me. The Sega Mega Drive was really cool. It was just hours of fun. All right then. Okay, well let's end it at that. So that's been great, really good fun, and I apologize that we were late beginning, but anyway, we got there in the end. So Dan from the Iconoclast, thank you for taking part in Millennial 2018.
Yeah, it's been great. Let's do it next year. Merry Christmas, everyone in the chat. Have a good one.
Okay, thank you to everyone for watching. I'll be back in about 20 minutes, and let me check who it is. I've forgotten who's on next. It's Ramsey Paul. Oh, that should be interesting. Okay, see you then.